Radio Real. Real radio, your reality.
Welcome to Off the Shelf,
the Second Life radio show and podcast about books and the people who love them.
I'm Kigia Girardi.
And this is Simeon Beresford.
Join us as we survey the literary scene in our virtual world. Hello, and welcome to Off the Shelf. We have one of our old friends, Emerin Rich, for you today. Ems writes horror and teen romances, and she hosts the successful podcast Horror Addicts. We met her when she started organizing the first literary horror fest in Second Life.
We said we'd give her all the help she needed, and she believed us.
Hi, Ems. Welcome to Off the Shelf.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me today.
So, people in Second Life probably know you best for your dark fantasy stories, such as Night's Nights. So we'll start with that. How did it evolve? Will there be any more stories set in that world? Is it complete?
That story is complete, but there's many more sequels to come. I actually started writing that in college and started podcasting it just about, I think it was 2 years ago, 2007 or so. And the print version will be coming out in October. And shortly after that, the sequel, Dusk's Warriors, will be coming out.
So, but you're also doing this teen romance series, Sweet Dreams. That's the second,
yes.
Isn't it? So, is it the first one proved a success? Yeah. So, or you wouldn't be doing the second?
Yes, I kind of did it as a test. These are stories that I wrote in high school. They're about love. They have no horror in them whatsoever. the lead character wants to be a singer, and it's about her climb to stardom and the romance that she has while it's happening. And, you know, a couple of my friends and first readers had read the books and liked them and said, hey, you know, you did Night's Nights as a podcast. Why don't you do Sweet Dreams? And I said, I don't know. Sweet Dreams is kind of corny and, you know, it's like young teen love and stuff. And they said, oh, I'm sure there's lots of people that would like to hear it. So I did that as a test, and I have gotten so much feedback on it. I can't even keep up with the emails. It's just people are loving it. So I went ahead and did the second one.
Okay. So was it the same audience?
No. No, I have a pen name for Sweet Dreams, M-E-Z Madrigal, and I purposely posted the Sweet Dreams audio separately. I didn't promote it with my horror. I purposely posted it on Patio Books with the name M-E-Z Madrigal in the romance section. Some fans like both of the novels, and some can only do romance, and some can only do horror. And I don't really care as long as someone's listening.
You said that you wrote those when you were a teenager?
Yeah. I started them when I was about 16, 17 years old. And, of course, I've changed them since then. But I tried to keep the same, like, corny teenage love thoughts that, you know, all teenage girls have.
and
the writing a little bit better.
I'm just imagining the slang that you found when you went back and reread your books.
Yes, well, most of the stuff that I had to change was like, she carried her Walkman. You know, they don't carry Walkmans no more. You know, I had to change it to iPod. And the singer is actually wanting to be a jazz singer, so I didn't have to change too much of that because jazz is still jazz. So, you know, she still is harking back to like Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong kind of stuff. So
you didn't have to make the
the reference is more contemporary for the music. That's
right,
great.
Right. I have to cut the CNC Music Factory out of it.
Okay, well, you obviously you're writing two very different genres, horror and teen romances, and I hope there's a difference between the two. How, as an author, do you switch between the two now that you're are you doing a mental shift, or is it just all writing for you?
I cut with any writing, I kind of use music as my tool, kind of like if I want to write Sweet Dreams, I'll put on a lot of like 80s music. I'll listen to, God forbid, New Kids on the Block, the old stuff. I know people are liking them again, so maybe that's not too bad to say. But my friend in high school was so into New Kids on the Block, and actually one of the characters in the book is supposed to be a boy bander. So when I want to get into the Sweet Dreams mindset, I'll either listen to jazz or to that. And then if I'm going for the horror, I put on some kind of dark music, either classical kind of dark compositions or, you know, like dark wave or alternative music.
Do you post your music list after you publish your book so people know what you were listening to? I know some authors do that.
I don't, but I should. I don't, but I should.
Very good.
I knew we should have got that. Well, I told you we should have had that jazz number, didn't I? For our music break. But we didn't. You'll have to find out what it is when we get to that bit of the show. Well, I find my place again.
Your teen romances contain warnings about the nature of its contents. That doesn't seem to maybe fit with what we think of as teen romance. How does that work given your target audience for that? Do you find a lot of resistance, or do people even notice?
Well, I was worried about that when I first started podcasting it. I was like, you know, maybe I should cut out some of the sex scenes or whatever. But as right after that, I was thinking, you know, I wrote this when I was 17 in high school.
Exactly,
this is
yeah.
what I was dreaming of. So I just went with it. I mean, they're not, you know, they're just straightforward sex, no kinky stuff in that book. There's no blood. There's no, you know, vampire sex or anything like that. But, you know, it's just straightforward, good, clean sex. And, you know, it's not too much in the book, but just enough to, you know, show the romance between these two people. Yeah. And I just let it happen and saw and, you know, decided, well, if the fans don't like it or if they think it's too, you know, raunchy, then they won't listen or I'll get feedback and maybe I'll cut it differently next time. But they seem to like it.
Yeah.
Sounds like you've got a fan.
Well, I like people as well. Nothing wrong with with vanilla, just as long as you get some sprinkles.
Anyway, are you going to ask him any questions, or am I doing the interview today?
I'm sorry, I'm totally losing track. I think that getting IMs every 5 minutes. So, did you have trouble getting your fans to move over to the new genre? Did you have to really pull them over, the horror people, or did they just find it by themselves?
I pretty much let them find it by themselves, and some of them, because I didn't think they would like it, you know. It was from a different time in my life, and now I probably wouldn't read it, or I might read it, because I do have that little kind of corny romantic in me that likes to watch romantic comedies and stuff like that. So I might pick it up. But if I was straight core horror fan, I probably wouldn't like Sweet Dreams. So I just let it go. And, you know, a lot of them went and found it on their own because they're like, oh, what else is on her website? Oh, Street Dreams, what's this, you know? And it's very straightforward. It says that it's a teen romance. Well, it doesn't say teen, but it does say it's a romance and a musical romance at that with no horror in it. And they chanced it, and some of them like it, some of them don't.
Fair enough.
You You mentioned that you have Nights coming out in print in the fall. Is that your first book in print?
Yes, it will be.
Who's publishing it, and where will people be able to find it?
Well, I'm actually self-publishing. It's going to be print on demand through Amazon. And I'm also having a release party in October in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. More of that information will be coming on my website at emsbox.com. And I'm really excited about it. I can't wait.
Definitely.
I hope it goes well.
That's exciting. Let us know and we'll be able to link out to it for people that are looking for you here.
Oh, yeah, that'd be so great.
Okay. I know that you're on Facebook and you are obviously in Second Life and podcasting. So you're using a lot of different types of media to reach your fans. Has this been a conscious marketing campaign, or are you just one of those people that likes to try lots of things?
Well, it's kind of two things. One is I try anything I hear about. I am a knowledge vampire. I just want to know everything I can, especially about technology. So that's one of the things. The other one is that the only reason I came on Facebook, MySpace, all those places is because I had a fan email me and say, hey, I'm on Facebook. I'd like to have you there. And I was like, okay. So I joined up and I really enjoy it and got more fans that way. As far as MySpace, the same thing. I'm on MySpace. I'd like to have you there. Okay, no problem. So if you've got a social network out there online that you'd like to have me on, email me.
Yes. Are you on LibraryThing?
No.
Well, you'd better join.
I have to write that one down. Okay. LibraryThing.com, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, great. I'm going to join it.
So how much time does that part take out of your day or your week? Or do you even monitor that?
Oh, it's so much. I get emails and then I might not respond to them for a couple of weeks. Please don't be mad. I have so much email and, you know, a regular job that I have to, you know, bring home the food for the table. And I usually try to dedicate one night a week at least. Maybe I'll go like 4 or 5 hours and then I'll go, oh God, I need to write and I'll stop. So it does take a large portion of my time. And it's not that I don't like doing it. I love doing it. It's just sometimes I'm a little slow to reply and that's why.
Right. Well, it makes you very accessible to your fans. What are some of the challenges of being so you're my friend kind of author for these fans? You're very close to, well, obviously the time involved.
I don't really see any kind of, the time involved is a lot. And I don't really see any drawbacks to it. I like being connected to my favorite authors. When my favorite authors answer my emails or talk to me on Facebook, I'm like, oh, I'm so stoked they answer me. You know, yeah, they took time out of their busy schedules to answer me. That's so cool. And it really makes you accessible to your fans and they enjoy that and they would like to talk to you. So I don't mind that at all. There's been a couple scary moments, stalker kind of issues, but I've dealt with those. I don't think that there's anything adverse that has happened to me for because of being so accessible, and I hope it never will.
Yeah,
I love
very
talking
connected.
To fans on Facebook.
I think that's wonderful. And does it leave you enough time to write to when you, well, obviously you're managing your time very well to say once a week I do X, but you do have enough time to write, I hope.
Yeah. I do have, recently I haven't been writing too much because I'm editing the I'm editing the Nights to be printed. So that's taken a lot of my time. And then Horror Addicts just launched. And then I'm putting in the second sequel to Sweet Dreams. So right now I'm all about editing and podcasts and audio editing. So I haven't been writing too much, but I am working on the sequel to Nights, when I have a spare second, and it's going very well. I'm almost done with that.
Excellent. You, when we talked earlier in the week, you talked about recently going to BayCon. Not bacon, by the way. It's BayCon.
Yeah, much better.
We had that discussion with Simeon earlier. What was different attending BayCon as a writer rather than being a fan who attends it?
Well, first I got to say that my husband, every time BayCon comes around, you know that commercial about bacon? I don't know if it's dog treats or whatever, but he goes around the house going, bacon, bacon. So, you know, it's an easy mix out there. I think the major difference in going as an author rather than a audience member is just it's a little bit more stressful because you're trying to pitch yourself and a lot of people don't know who you are. Even though I do have a lot of fans on podcasts, there's still a lot of people that don't know who I am. So handing out cards and pitching myself and talking in panels about, you know, what happened when I lost a whole hour of audio or whatever it is that I'm talking about. It's a little bit more stressful, but it's really cool because you meet all these different people that you would never reach just being on iTunes or Patio Books. And I really enjoy meeting a lot of new people.
They're not just names, they're faces, and you can see how much in their face how much they enjoy what you
Right,
let's take a break, listen to some music, and when we return we'll talk about your podcasting. You might find out what we've chosen now.
How is it you can feel no sorrow? Best, the worst, the most. I'm thinking dumbling relatives. It's not about you, but your glass is highest at every toast. When she's around, my ship runs aground. The wedding dress is very nice. The pearl, the stitch, the lace. A yeasty mess is put on ice. You grab the bottle by the neck, you pull it up to your face. When she starts to emote, my boat doesn't float. How is it you can feel no sorrow at the way you have failed? Thinking you will still be chocolate chips. She suffers from superlatives. She suffers from superlatives. I think you're at 1459. When she's being all cute, my pork loin turned to prosciutto. Oh.
How is it you can feel no sorrow at the way you have been? Thinking you will still be here tomorrow.
She suffers from superlatives. She suffers from superlatives.
That was She Suffers from Superlatives by George Crabb. It's available on Mevio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mevio.com.
While we're on the subject of music, could I say how much I like the music on your teen romance podcast? So, could you tell us something about your sources so we can steal them?
Well, thank you so much. That music is piano music by Neil McPherson. He's an excellent pianist, and I actually reached him through Craigslist. But I do use the Mevio network, the PodSafe website that they have, and yeah. I just want to encourage anybody out there that's a musician making songs that you think maybe nobody would want, or different genres, please post it on PodSafe, because when us podcasters are out trolling for songs, maybe we want like a moon song that's in jazz style with a little bit of steampunk dropped in, and that just happens to be your expertise, you know, it's really helpful to us, and it gets your name out there. So
yeah.
Ems, when we've chatted in the past, you've mentioned how your podcasts have really evolved over time, especially the ones for your novels. It's gone a bit beyond just altering your voice to reflect the different characters. It's a little bit like the old radio shows. Why did you decide to add those elements, and how have your listeners responded?
Well, there's kind of two different thought processes in podcasting. One is, I'm going to read my book. I'm going to read it very straight, as if I'm telling it to you as a children's bedtime story. And the other one is, I'm going to edit the voices and make them all, you know, different pitches and sound like different people and have accents and have screaming and moans and crying and sobbing and all that kind of stuff, doors creaking. And that's the way that I went, because I didn't find audio... I didn't find the audiobooks that normal audiobooks in the store where they just read the book. I found them so boring. So I wanted to do the voices and the sound effects and make you feel like you're actually there with the character. And the response to it is mixed because people are different. Some of them like that. Some of them don't like the audio drama. And that's, you know, been told to me many times, oh, get somebody else to read it, or, you know, the voices are annoying, or, you know, you can't do a male's voice, or whatever it may be. But, you know, I'm just presenting a work of art to you guys, and if you like it, listen. If you don't, there are billions of other podcasters out there that have their stories out, and find one that you like and follow them.
So do you still think of them as novels, or are they turning into audio plays?
Well, I still think of them as novels, but myself, if I'm reading a novel, I kind of have that running play in my head. The characters' voices do change. If they're going into a subway, I hear the subway. So that's kind of how my mind works. And I know a lot of audio play people will say, oh, well, it's not a novel. It's an actual script, like a movie script. But mine, I still keep them in novel form, and I still think of them as my novels.
We have a lot of writers here in Second Life, as you know, and I'm sure many of them have been thinking about podcasting their own novels. And we know in Horror Fest that you've been really generous with offering tips and guidance to folks. What would you advise writers converting their novels to podcast? Where would you advise them to start?
Well, first of all, do not go out and buy the most expensive mic and the pitch software and all these different tools that cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars before you realize that you hate podcasting. I've had several friends online that have said, oh, I want to podcast my book. They get two chapters in and they're like, this sucks. I hate this. I'm not going to spend hours editing audio. And then you get all these haters giving you reviews that say that they hate your book. No, I'm not doing this. And they back off slowly with about $500 to $1,000 of debt because of their podcast software. Yeah. So my advice is, get yourself a mic, either if it's on built into your laptop or a $12 mic at Walmart, whatever it is, get yourself a cheap mic. Start recording your voice. Listen back to it. See if you can add the voices. See if you can add music. And slowly decide whether you're actually going to commit to this or not, because it's a lot of work. And there is a free audio software program online that I actually use called Audacity. You can test out your podcast software with that. There's different little tools as you get a little further along that I can give you. You know, email me anytime. I have no problem helping you out.
See, I knew you would be generous enough to help everybody. And we've been talking a lot about your novels and your novels as podcasts, but we did mention...
Yeah, I don't mind. It might take a couple weeks for me to respond to the...
But you'll get there. We've talked about your podcast as novel, or your novels as podcast. Yeah. But we also mentioned Horror Addicts, but we haven't explained what Horror Addicts is. So why don't you describe the show a little bit and talk about how it got started?
Sure. Horror Addicts started when I realized I was done with Nights, my vampire novel, and that I didn't have anything ready right away to go and keep my horror fans. So I was like, well, I'm just going to do a little talk show about horror and keep them involved, keep them interested, so that when my next novel comes out, you know, the audience will still be there. And also give them some horror online. There's not too much horror podcasting, even though it seems like there's 5 billion podcasters out there. Good horror podcasting is pretty rare. We have the great Mike Bennett that you can always listen to. He's excellent. We have Mark Eller, of course, and some others. But there's not really a horror show with podcasting for authors. And so I decided to do it. And what Horror Addicts is about 20 to 30, sometimes even 40 minutes of news, on movies. We do a movie of the week. You guys get homework where you have to go watch a horror movie, and then we'll review it. I have all kinds of different news coming in. I have two of my staff members. One is Nightmist. He reviews movies. And then I have Audrey, and she does the spookiness locator stuff. And so she tells us all about haunted locations that we can go visit.
Spookiest locator. Got it.
She's actually in the audience right now. She gives us little spooky news. So, you know, they all help me out. And then at the end of the show, there's always a story by a podcast author, or sometimes not, sometimes a traditional published author. And they read their short story in whatever way they want to. Voices sometimes, sometimes no voices. And you get to enjoy a little bit of horror fiction.
Nice.
So everyone helps you with the show. So what was your first podcast? That was Nights Nights, was it? Or did you do something before
that?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, and...
And?
Actually, my very first podcast was reading a couple of poems on...
You've forgotten, haven't you?
I'm sorry. My very first podcast was reading a couple of poems on the pod show. It's now Mevia.
Ah, yes. The pod show. Way back. So you're, but you contribute to Dash Punk and its associated podcasts as well. Can you tell me something about Dash Punk? How did you get involved in that?
Yes. Yes, Dash Punk is a site for speculative fiction reviews, news, all that kind of stuff. And I write a weekly post for them. Actually, it comes out on Sunday, so you can go over there and look at it today. I usually write about horror manga, horror movies sometimes. I add in a little bit of writing stuff, sometimes talk about Second Life and events that we have on here. And that is run by Eric and Brian. They are the podcasters that run Speculative Fiction Today. It's a sci-fi, horror, all speculative fiction podcast, and it's really great. They do it daily, which I do not understand how they do it, but they have a podcast every single day.
Which brings me back to you. Let's talk about your presence here in Second Life. You've moved the location of Quills. And for the people in Wirral, I've got a little notice up. But for those that are outside, can you tell them where you've moved it to?
Yes, we moved to Book Island. We used to be on Mark Eller's land with Hellhore Tavern, but he decided to give that up. He wasn't on Second Life as much as he would like to be, and just decided to give that land up. So we're sad to see all of Hell and the underbelly of Hell go, but I guess it's
had to go sometime.
It's time to come.
Yeah.
And well, so I moved Quills so over to Book Island. Yeah.
Seems like...
Oh, great, great.
Yeah. Yeah, we sold it off. It paid the rent for a month. Well, it looks like it's time we've got a
cool
wrap up. So, so let's see what we can do. One last question. What do you read? What have you been reading?
Well, I've been editing my book like crazy, so I haven't been reading too much, but I do have in my bag, whenever I get a chance, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. I'm about, I don't even think I'm even 20 pages in, but I'm really enjoying it. It's really funny, and if you like Jane Austen and zombies together, you're going to love it.
I've just started that. It's our next paranormal book discussion. So I hope you can come along to give us the benefit of your opinion. When is it, Kagia?
We're going to talk about Pride and Prejudice and Zombies on July 11th at 2 o'clock.
Well, thank you, Ems. We knew this would be an interesting interview, and we were right.
Ems, you are wonderful. We're going to put links to Ems' website and podcast on our show notes, along with some of the other places we've mentioned today.
And in addition to our paranormal book discussion, we're also planning to discuss Dorothy Connell's The Thin Woman.
Well, thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Yeah, where was I? We also plan to discuss Dorothy Connell's The Thin Woman during our cozy mystery discussion on July 13th.
I'd also like to mention that we've rescheduled our bootleggers ball for July 18th. Grid problems caused us to postpone the party, so if you get a chance to come in world and play with us on July 18th, we'd love to have you.
Now we close down the podcast and head into our in-world discussion.
Thanks, Sims, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Off the Shelf is produced for Radio Real by Kegia Girardi and Simeon Beresford. Technical production is by Radio Real. You can find Radio Real on the web at radioreal.org. Music on this program includes works by artists on the Magnatune label. The music in the general introduction is John Playford's All in a Garden Green by Eileen Hadidian and Natalie Cox from their album Dolce Musica, A Contemplative Journey. The off-the-shelf theme music is 1500 Tons by Burning Babylon from the album Stereo Mashup. And we bid you goodbye with this piece, Hagagasan 14 by Eternal Jazz Project, from their album Gratis Jazz. You can learn more about Magnatune and their artists on their website at magnatune.com. Off the Shelf is licensed under Creative Commons.